Welcome to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast all about stories of safety leadership, presented by Dale Carnegie and the Board of Certified Safety Professionals.
John, we have a great opportunity today to hear from a person that when we hear the organization that he works for, everybody's like, ooh, wow, they need safety and health? And they do. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, excited to welcome Marty Lake from ESPN. He is their Associate Director of Safety and Health. And so, Marty, welcome to the podcast. Why don't you talk a little bit about how you got started and maybe what your journey to ESPN looked like?
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate this. My journey started 27 years ago. I started off, my goal in life wasn't in safety and health, was to be an educator. My father's an educator, and so my degrees are education-based. So I've got degrees that I was going to be a teacher like my father. And so when I was getting ready to make my decision to attend the College of Education, I checked in with my father. I'm glad I did, because it was one of those things to say, hey, I would love to come home, because I love where I live. I live in Michigan. I live on the west side of Michigan. And so I've grown up on Lake Michigan my whole life. And I love the water. And so I didn't want to go to Texas. Not that there's anything wrong with going to Texas. I just, my roots are at home in Michigan. So came up a little roadblock, because there wasn't going to really be an opportunity for me to get a full-time teaching position for about 10 years or so. So I tried to figure out my next course of action. So I took my degrees and got into, back in the 90s when everything was environmental cleanup and support on that, I went into that environment and started working. And that's when I was introduced to the safety and health side, because I was the person on site that was the one that read the safety manual or the safety plan and had to implement it. And so for a few years I was doing my work, and all of a sudden the safety department person came up to me and said, hey, would you be interested in coming over to our side of the world and do safety and health? And I said, well, you know, I've got this teaching thing that I want to do. And he goes, well, you know, in a roundabout way, in safety and health, we definitely do a lot of education. We do a lot of review. We do a lot of things, and we have to do research. So, you know, kind of like a teacher, I went, you know, that's true. And so started my journey doing safety and health and the environmental cleanup side, taking the part that I started with and now doing the safety side of it while they were doing the remediation and things like that. So got involved in that, really liked it. And then once I established that this was going to be my lot in life, my career, I decided that, or my boss decided, he goes, well, I think you need to become a certified safety professional. I went, oh, really? I said, okay. So they pushed it on me, and then I've been a CSP now for 20 years. And so thankful for the opportunity. But yeah, I've worked at some of the big sites. I worked at before the fund that I'm doing now. I spent time doing, I worked at Ground Zero. We were the rapid response contractor that came down and helped out at that environment. So I spent a lot of time doing safety work there. And then once I decided I was done with the remediation world, I got into construction, and then I did get into some manufacturing. So like I said, 27 years of doing a lot of safety and health, and then the gift was bestowed upon me 13 years ago to be able to work in broadcasting, sports television.
Okay, so I just have to say that, Marty, in my experience, I found that people who had education degrees that never ended up actually teaching were wonderful people to have in organizations for some of the reasons you described. They had an ability to communicate. They understood how to structure some ideas. But when you got that call about coming to ESPN, what thoughts crossed your mind? Because I guess for the rest of us sport fans out here, we just think that's the magical place.
Well, I played college baseball, so being an avid sports fan to begin with, yeah, it was like, all right, cool, I'm going to go to baseball games and football games and just hang out, and this is going to be cool. Yeah, there's a lot more to it than
just, there is.
Yeah, you know, than coming out to hang out. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of things going on that, you know, that is involved in that. But you know, it's definitely been a fun ride.
So Marty, Could you help paint a picture for us a bit of what aspect of safety and health do you get involved with? Who are you? What kind of people are you protecting and working with and overseeing? Could you give us some, just help paint the picture for us?
Sure, sure. We definitely, okay, so with one of our larger shows, we have the camera operators that put the show on. We have the technical folks that mix the sounds and pictures and do everything. We have stat folks. We have everybody that's around the broadcast, depending on the size of the show, that are on site. And so we have different exposures. Typically, the camera folks are the ones that are exposed to the most things because they're going to be exposed to weather, fans, the environment, you know, everything that's around that. And a lot of the other folks are sitting in the trucks and taking the information and doing their magic so you can enjoy it on television.
And do you find that the people you're working with, your camera crews, and especially those folks who tend to be outside more, do they oftentimes... are they alert to some of the safety issues and the dangers they have to watch out for? Or do you have to help educate them and make them aware? What do you find in with that?
It's a little combination of both, because you know, those camera folks have been doing it forever and a day. And so they know what their craft is, and they know that there are some exposures to things. So what I try to do for them is you know, partner. I talk with all of them because it's one of those things. I want a good relationship with our teams, because if I can provide them the information to help protect them, they'll tend to do it. And then I also do on our end too is because these guys have been, these people have been doing this job for a long time. You know, I do lean on them for their expertise, and sometimes, you know, they've got the right idea to help protect in the environment. So, you know, we do everything we can to just be a team, and they know that I'm there for them. They know I'm not just the safety cop coming out to do all the nasties and tell them here's everything you've done wrong and here's where, you know, things are bad. You know, it's if there's a condition, here's what I see, here's what I suggest that we fix it this way. Is it going to make sense, or does it work in television? Because they've educated me in broadcasting, because I've come from construction and everything else where, you know, things are, the hazards are the same, but the environment's not, you know, so it's definitely something different.
And just to clarify for myself and our listeners, are these your employees, ESPN employees, or are they contractors, or who are you working with?
We have a combination. So we definitely have staff members, and then we do have vendors on site too. So, you know, but it's the culture that we have, which is really good that, you know, our operations teams that are out there that are managing the environment, because we have to have people come out and say, okay, well, this is the show we're going to do, and here's everything we need, and here are the people we need. And so those are the folks I work really directly with, because we need to know who's going to be there, what fun things they want to bring out to show on television, because that tends to be the thing that everything seems fine until, oh, hey, we want to hang a camera off of a scaffold or something different. And so we have to be that, okay, how are we going to accomplish it? Can we accomplish it? And, you know, so, yeah, so it's definitely, you know, we work with a lot of different people on it, and we do fly under the same flag. So they know that we're going to be proactive. We're going to protect workers and protect people, because, you know, it's, you know, obviously it's the right thing to do, and that's what we want to do. And like I said, I'm passionate about this, because and all the safety meetings that I do, I always say, you know, it's, you know, I want you to go home the way you got here. And, you know, it's just, and they understand that I mean it.
So Marty, I'm curious, a couple of points that you made there is, mm-hmm. You know, a lot of our listeners, they may work at organizations where they don't necessarily control the environment. So you're sending
yep.
employees to client sites, and you don't necessarily mm-hmm. control that client site. And when I think about your role, I think about, you don't necessarily own fan behavior, right? You don't right. own right. stadium personnel. And so there are these pretty significant variables in, you know, you mentioned working at Ground Zero and how you kind of have an environment there that with a lot of variables changing minute to minute, second mm-hmm. to second. You know, how do you go about, you know, for some of the folks that are listening, you know, helping through where you're managing all these uncontrolled variables where you almost have to expect the unexpected?
Yeah. Well, we definitely, because again, we don't own the environment, we don't own the stadium, we're a visitor. And so we typically meet with the stadium personnel before anything is built, before we see anything. And so we tend to go and do our walkthroughs and look at their environment, because again, stadiums, venues have been around since early 1900s to the current. So the way they build them now are definitely not the way they were built back in the day. And the stadiums don't typically have safety professionals. So they, you know, so when we come on site as a safety person, you know, we, you know, during our walkthroughs with them, we tell them about things that are considered hazardous and things that would cause some, you know, for our workers while we're there. And typically the other thing too is we're not the only broadcasting company. So there are others that are going to come behind us. And so we, you know, if we can educate them, and during our walkthroughs, we walk through and say, hey, this is a fall hazard. This is something, you know, can we put anchor points where the cameras are? Because inevitably the camera's got to be able to see what it needs to see, but the worker needs to be protected.
How important is that relationship with the stadium? Because I'm assuming that you probably go to these places multiple times, or at least some of these places multiple times, given the dynamics of sports. You know, what does that relationship look like? How do you cultivate it? How important is it? What does that look like for you?
It's very important, like I said. So we definitely, when we come on site, you know, try to have that partnership mentality. So, you know, like I said, every time we come to a stadium, it's pretty much the same people that we're seeing. I mean, there are some turnovers at some stadiums, and with the new ones, you know, we set up, you know, the meetings, and we talk about, here's some of the things that we're going to be looking at and things that we want to do. Because again, the bottom line is this is going to be on television, and we need to be able to get there, but we also need to make sure that we're taking care of the people that are doing that. So yeah, we do a really great job partnering with the venues and stadiums.
Well, it looks like it would be because you're a well-known name, a household name, and the person behind the scenes at the stadium in charge of that is not the household. So it could be very intimidating to them. And many times, Marty, even for safety professionals in manufacturing, transportation, logistics, the safety professional can come across as, I am the knowledgeable one and you're not. Could you give us maybe an example of how you broke down a barrier like that to reassure the person, hey, we're in this together. We're not your big brother. We're just here to work together. Any specific examples?
You know, the fall protection thing has always been the one that we've always had to be the educators on, because before safety, I want to say in television there, we weren't predominant with the companies 20 years ago. But a lot of these folks have been around 20 years ago. And so they see us coming in and implementing things to protect them. And so the fall protection has always been the one, because they're saying, well, I got to wear the equipment. I never had to wear it before. And then to pull it, because when I go and work with them on the installation of it, I walk them through the who, where, what's, and why's. And I always tell them too, I go, you know, to be honest, where you're located, at the condition isn't as bad as it is, but because you're a human being and you could have some medical issue, you could have some other thing that happens, or it could be a fan that bumps into you in the back. So I'm protecting you for the what if scenario. And then so a lot of times the light bulb goes on and goes, I didn't think about that. You know, I just think about, you're putting me in this to prevent me from fall, and I'm not going to try to fall. And so when I throw that other spin on, you know, there are the other things that could possibly cause them to fall off a platform or a camera, you know, a scaffold or something like that. They get it and they understand. And so they're receptive to it. And say, we broke down the barriers years ago because it was us versus them. But once they started seeing that, you know, that we weren't doing it just for one reason, we were doing it for multiple reasons that we have no control over.
And what you're talking about doing there, firstly, really goes back to fitting with being a teacher and instructing and guiding. But when you think about the people that are listening to this podcast, they're not going out and setting up cameras and things like that. But they're working with people who probably think, I don't plan to get hurt. I've been doing this for a while and all. And the safety professional has this great opportunity of having had vast experiences and seeing different things and can plant that idea that this could happen. What if? Just talk to us a little bit more of the power of what if. And for folks that are listening to this, how they can put that into action with where they're at. You described it some, but tell us a bit more.
I guess the what if, again, because of the, at least in my world, we have more of an aging workforce. There aren't a whole lot of kids doing what we're doing right now. So because what I'm working with, again, it comes down to me because, okay, so we're outside. So worked in construction, we're outside. We're a victim to the weather. We can't control the weather. We can't do anything about the weather, but we have to be able to say, if this condition happens, we need to stop. We need to go to an indoor location and a location to wait it out. And in television, we do that. We definitely do that because we use services to monitor the weather for us. And if lightning were to come within the parameters that we set, we will lock cameras off and evacuate because, again, something we can't control. Those are the major what ifs. I mean, we can sit there and talk about forecasting weather and things like that. But and then the other things, too, the what if factor is like my team hasn't won against this team in forever and we win and there's going to be a massive storming of the field. And so as part of our process to do that, say, OK, guys, so you got to think about the hazard that's going to be present. The camera can be replaced. You cannot. So if, you know, let the camera be banned and you go and seek your shelter in your location. So I everything to me, again, when I'm doing what I do and trying to help, it definitely is, you know, I'm concerned about the person and the people that are doing the work. And so, and then when I come off that way to them and make them important and make them feel like they're not just a worker doing what they need to do. We care about what they're doing and we want them to be safe.
And that certainly fits with a Dale Carnegie principle of make the other person feel important and do it sincerely. So there's something about human beings that when they feel like this person treats them like they are a person of value, that we tend to respond to that rather than, I just want you to do this. It's because of their importance. And that opportunity that the safety leader has then to be looking for possibilities that people just may never have considered. What other insights could you give to folks that are listening to that to remind them, aim for the partnership and this is how you do it?
Yeah, the partnership, I consider everybody my customer. So that's kind of like the approach that I take. You're my customer. And so what can I do to help you do what you need to do? And so that's kind of, I mean, and I think I've been successful with it. I don't know if there's other that have, you know, this is something that's working for us because we definitely want, you know, we have lots of professionals in the field. And so they're skilled in what they do for a living and, you know, and I'm skilled at what I do. So, you know, it's one of those things that is when we have that customer mentality that they're looking at me like, I'm not, again, no safety cop. But on the other hand, too, but say no safety cop. If there's something that's happening that's immediately dangerous life, I will apply the safety cop mentality when I have to.
But that's not the card you play first.
That's not the card I play first, unless it's immediately dangerous to life and health.
Then exactly.
Boom. And then I'll explain it later. So, yeah. So it's not something that I guess this whole partnership is I'm still firm, but I'm going to work with you. You know, so it's one of those things. So, you know, the partnership is there, but if it's going to harm you or it's going to be against the rules and regulations, you know, I will stand firm on what, you know, is right.
And John, what a combination we just heard there. Firm, but with the spirit and attitude of helpfulness together. And that is really, sir, Marty, one of the great ways to pull it together. And one other thing on these lines before we move on, you go and approach folks with, what can I do to help you? Marty, what does that do to a human being's spirit when the person comes, not just says those words, but they're said with a sincerity of heart, and really, I mean that, I want to help. What goes on to the person, inside the person that hears that?
Well, typically for me, that means if we're a partner, if I ask you to do something, the likelihood of you not having a hard time with it increases. They're gonna work with me. Okay, if you're telling me I need this, it's a reason, and I know that you're gonna listen to me if I say there's something that, okay, this is not gonna work because of this condition, or this can't because if I do something like this, it'll get in the shot. You know, so they know that, and I know that because of the partnerships I make, that my ability to implement something increases because they know I'm not there slapping it down their throat saying it's my way or no way. And so they know that there's a reason behind it. And typically, like I said, I'll do my best to explain the why.
And there's a couple of Carnegie principles that you were putting into practice there. First one, ask questions instead of giving direct orders. That's such a powerful one. And then another one is to begin in a friendly way, not coming out guns blazing like, hey, this is how it's got to be. You start friendly, you start respectful, and that opens up the doors for things to go better. So you've modeled some great, great human relations principles there along the way.
Yeah, and I think one thing, Marty, I'd be curious is that, you know, you have those partnerships both internally, but I suspect you have them externally as well. So these venues, sometimes we see games on your network or it might be other networks, but there's maybe some multiple collaborators, local TV broadcasts as well. How do you extend those partnerships where maybe you've got something figured out and you want to share that, or someone of your maybe competitors or cohorts have something figured out, but in the spirit of our industry, we share and we don't look at that as competition. Is that something that you encounter?
Oh, definitely. I am friends with all of the safety managers or directors at the networks. So all the big ones, I know them personally.
Wow.
And so if I have a condition at this stadium, I'll end up calling my friends and say, hey, if you're coming to this stadium, here's what is they did an expansion, or they're under construction. And so, yeah, we typically, because there are no trade secrets, you know, we're all in the same boat of protecting people and workers. And so, yeah, and they do that with me. I'll get a call saying, hey, you know, if you're going to this stadium, here's a condition, and be aware of it. So I can notify our team to say, hey, we may need additional safety gear at this one because of this condition that was just brought to our attention. So, yeah, we collaborate all the time. Great partners with all the networks, because it's just, again, we're doing the same thing. It's just that what letters are in front.
Okay. Does that extend to some of the variables that we talked about earlier, like fan behavior? So on the outside, it feels like fan behavior is different today than what it might have been 20 years ago. You know, you see goalposts coming down and flags being planted and all kinds of fun stuff right now. And so, but that plays into your teams that are sitting on the sidelines and in the stampedes or in the shifts. Have you seen where maybe you're taking different approaches because some of your variables are shifting in a less favorable direction at all?
Sure. They can. And we have a great security team at our company too. So, and we partner with our security team always, because it's one of those things, again, those are the things that we have no control of. And most of our security folks are retired PD, FBI, and, you know, came from other organizations. And so they have the knowledge to crowd control and getting intel on things. And so, you know, we partner with them to make sure, say, is there a protest that we need to be aware of that's going to be outside the stadium, or, there's a threat of an active shooter or something like that. So, you know, we partner with them because those are pretty much with my team. Yeah, the broadcast team is really important, but my security team that I work with internally is really, really important because we're sharing information back and forth. I'm giving them the safety side. They're giving me the stuff that we need to know for those scenarios. And like I said, if we get to a point where it looks like they're going to storm the field, we're in communication with our security team, and then they're going to work on making sure that we have adequate or as much adequate as we can so we can get out of the zone if necessary.
Again, this spirit of partnership is pretty impressive with the local people at those facilities, with your other quote-unquote competitors. That is really appealing to the nobler motive to say, you may have a different label on the name of your company, but you're human beings and we're all in this together. How much could you encourage other people? I see within even one organization, one building, where there are competitors against each other and they forget it's the well-being of the people. Could you just give a word of an admonishment or instruction that would just help people remember to do this better?
Well, like I said, I mean, meet with people. I mean, I guess, see, for us, everything is about meeting, be it Zoom, be it face-to-face, you know, it's get together. And we, you know, just here's what we're looking at. Here's what we want to do. What are your motives? What do you need to do? And how do we accomplish what we need to do? So again, we talk a lot. And so that's just something I think we're good at.
And if in reality, Marty and John, that idea of we can talk to each other, and there's something about that that breaks down the walls of resistance, we can be open and we're not trying to, well, what's that person thinking about this or what that? It helps to make those working relationships for the well-being of the people to be much better. What is it that you wish people knew about the kind of work that you do that you say they really don't know? What do you wish somebody knew and could understand about what you do?
Oh, we get it all the time. Oh, this is who you work for? Oh, everything's so great. It's so, you know, because you're only seeing what you're seeing on television. You don't see that I'm there for days beforehand, getting it set up or working with the teams while they're setting things up, making sure because it you know, there are load in. I mean, we have exposures to equipment and things like that because not all the equipment is you can do by hand. And so if you're getting extra time on overtimes and extra innings, we don't like that because eventually we're as soon as the show's over, we got to pack it up and take it on to the next one. So we're there for just a short amount of time. And so those trucks and that equipment and all has to go to maybe from California to Florida. So, yeah, so the glamour you see for the 3 hours, there's so much time required to put it on and to take it down and go to the next one.
So as we think about that, you know, you coming into this role, some similarities to the past, some new stuff, probably not in broadcasting before here. Who are some of the mentors or relationships that maybe you sought out early on to enable the success that you've had?
Well, our operations team, lean on them a lot because if we sit in their meetings and they talk about the 1080p and all the things the 4K and the things that they have to do to achieve what you see on television is amazing. And so I sit there and listen to these folks as much as I can because they are definitely talking a different language that I don't understand. And so, but I always want to learn because I guess the more I know, the more it's easy for me to help make a decision or to make a suggestion. So, you know, so I do everything I can to get to know as much about the broadcast piece, because again, these guys and gals are just wonderful at what they do, and what you see on television, it looks great, and the work behind it for it to look great is all these folks doing it. And like I said, if I can learn from them and help them out, that's what we're going to do.
And that's the kind of message we hear from other folks, John. The wise safety professional listens to the colleagues that work with them. Those departments are speaking a different language. You were rattling off some numbers and names, and I have no idea what that was, Marty, but that's the way it works. And we're willing to listen to not just talk about what we've got, but what angle are they coming from? And that's a big deal.
And communicate back to them in their language. And so, right. You know, I think that enables some of the success or challenges that we have every day is our ability to talk in the same languages. And so,
and then they get the thing that you're willing to listen. And so that, you know, that helps a lot as well. Cause if you're going to talk my talk, you're willing to listen to what I'm trying to accomplish.
So when we're thinking about working with individuals and working in these groups, this idea of give and take is really important idea for the safety professional. Cause sometimes it's easy to say, hey, I'm looking out for lives. I'm looking out for well-being. Everybody listen up. But to them, their angle of the pie they're working on has a big significance. So would you talk about, just allude to that a bit, give and take, Marty. Why is that just so critical for safety professionals that are listening right now?
I guess, you know, the give and take always is, you know, giving your time, giving the ability to listen and to understand their world, because again, a lot of stuff is foreign to me, because I'm a safety person. I have the regulations and everything in my back pocket, and we think that, you know, the hazards that exist are the same, but they're not, because they're not to this person's function that they're doing with us. And so, you know, it's all, you know, again, it's all about doing everything I can and we can, as you know, as the company, to do the right thing, give them, you know, the give and take. Okay, I'm willing to stay later to make sure that this can happen or that we get this done, or can I find you this equipment or something to help you move something, you know? So, you know, we're always trying to do everything we can, again, because it's the ultimate goal is what you see on television. And like I said, it's a family, no matter what crew I'm on. I mean, we get, you know, we're going to come in and we're going to do what you need from us. And we're going to make sure that you're doing the right thing.
And that goes to a principle called, try honestly to see things from the other person's point of view. They have an angle they're looking at. And that's meaningful, because when we take the initiative to do that, they tend to respond to the way we initiate. And that's a good way to live.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you're looking at that, again, I think it goes to, and Marty, you spoke about this, is you've got the contractor piece, the vendor piece, the employee piece, and making sure that communication is effective is critical to, you know, mission success, in this case, broadcast success. And going back to one of the points you made about some of the folks you interface that aren't at the same company, I think a lot of our listeners sometimes feel that they don't always have the support network that they need, and maybe there's some best practices that they're unaware, but they don't necessarily know how to create those connections. Any advice for folks that are trying to build a network, with other companies that have maybe figured some things out, and you can kind of eliminate the learning curve a little bit?
Wow. Well, definitely. I mean, when I was in construction, I, you know, going to our conferences, you know, because then, you know, going to some of those sessions that you're hearing, you know, and speaking to some of those professionals that are presenting, because that's where I tend to find some of the little tidbits and tools to use, and maybe sometimes give them a little bit of information. And so, you know, giving your business card. So again, that's how I was able to do that in that world. Well, broadcasting is such a smaller scale. So everything we're trying to do is we're trying to ultimately speak and get as much info as we can, and then, you know, tell them that, you know, this is why we're doing
it. I think it speaks, Marty, to the partnership that we've been talking about this whole time, is that they don't view you, you know, a lot of times when we think about safety, you think about safety as this box, production is this box, and this other box, right? And the fact that you're part of that means there are no boxes, that it's kind of one team. And I think that speaks very highly of what you've been able to accomplish there.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's not all on me. My boss that just retired, and my other boss that's retiring, you know, they helped pave the way. I mean, we had the mission. They definitely pioneered it, and we were carrying it on. So it's a team effort, and like I said, all of us in the television world, all of the safety folks, you know, we all are on this path, you know, that, so we're all doing pretty much a version of what this is, you know. So because again, it's ultimately taking care of the folks that bring you the stuff you want to see.
So Marty, we're winding down toward an end. What piece of advice would you give folks, no matter what level they're at in their career, about navigating the future? You know, who knows what everybody's going to end up being when they, quote unquote, get big. What piece of advice could you give folks about the future?
Gosh. Navigating the future. Wow. As here I am getting ready to wind down and retire, hopefully in the next 5 or 6 years.
But you've guided through. You've right. guided through. Yeah.
You know, navigating, you know, again, my whole thought is, because I didn't come into this world as a safety person. It wasn't my goal, but now I see there's programs and stuff for it. And I see, interns and stuff occasionally on things. And, it's, you know, some advice as you navigate, you know, be passionate what you do, love what you do, listen. Again, that's my whole big thing is, you know, I hate when labels are put upon people without seeing the person. And so don't automatically assume that because you're the safety person that you're there to make my life, you know, terrible, or you're going to give me more work to do. So, you know, listen, definitely, you know, educate yourself as much as you can on things. If you're going to be put in these conditions where it's unknown to you, if you can learn enough to help and talk, maybe the decisions you make might flow into what they can and can't, you know, what they can do. And so I guess I just try to do my best to know what they know so I can help them out.
Yeah. And I think my question was similar, Marty. It was really along the lines of, you know, thinking back to what you originally wanted in terms of a career as an educator. Yeah. A little bit of a different path, like you mentioned, but do you feel satisfied that you actually are an educator, and now you actually get to see those successes as well, where maybe in an educational path, you don't get to see the successes. Your successes show up every day.
I'm blessed with what I do. I love being a safety professional. That was the greatest thing that happened to me. And I thank my friend every time I see him at a conference, because he works at another network. And so we get together, and I thank him all the time, because like I said, you opened my eyes to something that when I was younger doing what I was doing, because I wasn't always in safety, and I, you know, the safety professionals have a stigma again. And so I was on the other side, and by doing that, it helped me learn that, you know, since I already was over here, I already knew kind of what people thought of what we do. So that's why I was always trying my best to not be that. And so that's, you know, it's just one of those things that if we can talk, we can partner, we can work on it together. You know, we all win.
Marty, thank you for being an example of somebody who gets to do a job that they love and gets the opportunity to open the eyes of other people and gets to be an opportunity to be one that brings benefit to your customers every day. Thank you so much for sharing your story here.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on. I appreciate that.
Merle, I really enjoyed that conversation. I think the term that resonated with me was partner. And over, he kept talking about being a partner, what that means. And so my big takeaway was approaching things that everybody is your customer. And that really resonated with me.
And when he said, what can I do to help? He was the initiator to say, I'm here to help, not to be your commander in chief, but I'm here to guide you. And then when he wrapped up at the end and said, I simply love my job. And every time I see the man that encouraged me to get into this, I thank him and I'm grateful. That is a way to enjoy life to the fullest. And every safety professional could say that same thing as they look at their life and their world.
Yeah, agree.
Thanks for listening to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast produced in partnership by Dale Carnegie and BCSP, with your host, Dale Carnegie Master Trainer Merle Heckman, and John Fisher, Director of Environmental Strategy and Corporate EHS at Duke Energy Corporation, executive produced by Joel Bergai, directed by Giachi Liu, edited by Jared Grio and Kyla Anderson, editorial support from Brandon Mohawkt, social media support from Braylon Morgan. Consulting producers are Colin Brown and Mark Sullivan. To have new episodes delivered directly to you, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you'd like to share your story of a safety leadership challenge you faced, email us at info@mybigsafetychallenge.com. See you next time.